Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever loved somebody? The way God loves somebody, and He loves you.
Pastor Z CDC. This is yours truly, Pastor Z, in the Sanctuary Studio in Forestville, Maryland. I'd like to wish everyone a happy Sunday. We're glad to be able to get together, have this conversation about what's going on in our cities and what's going on with police and citizens of our communities. Media and just kind of have a conversation with people what's been trending in your neighborhood. Recently we had a tragic death of a young man in Baltimore, Mr. Freddie Gray, and we are clearly sending out our condolences to their family and to all of those people who have lost loved ones to violence. We just want to send out our prayers and our condolences and say it's time, fast time, for us to have a conversation about what's going on, particularly when it comes to police involved with the killing of young black males. We heard our President Barack Obama speak on this earlier this week, and he said this is nothing new as far as the injustice that has occurred when it comes to our youth, our young black males, and we just need to come together as a country and realize that this is a situation that more people need to get involved with as far as trying to resolve why these type of things continue to happen. And this is what we're going to have a conversation about this evening. Expecting to hear from Reb B to get on the line with us at some point. If you want to call in and have a discussion or something to say in regards to this, the call in number is 347-324-5569. That's 347-324-5569. We'll be glad to see what you have to say about it, see what's going on. And if we look at Baltimore earlier today, the mayor of the city, she said that declared that the curfew that was in place the last three days was over, and that many people were relieved to hear that. Many of the businesses we're relieved that the curfew, the 10 o'clock curfew is over. And just wanted to get people's ideas of how things can get better. I know that it takes more than one person to affect change, but it takes everyone with ideas working together to make the change. I know there was relief when the six officers were indicted, accused for various crimes, unlawful acts in the Gray incident, and seemed to give the people in the city a sense of hope that there will be justice to come. These men, women will get a fair trial, and the truth will come out, and justice will come in the manner that is needed. And so we thank God for the mayor, thank God for the governor, mayor of Baltimore, and the governor of Maryland. We just want to make sure that everyone is paying attention to what's going on with the different prosecutors are bringing about. And, you know, in that vein, we're glad to see that things are moving in the right direction. Still a very volatile situation. Things are still running raw, and we have to make sure that we continue to pray, continue to look for the correct answer. It's just interesting, though, to see how many different factions of our communities have come together over this incident where a young guy seemed to have been walking down the street and for whatever reason decided to run and eventually lost his life a week later from injuries to his spinal cord, and later almost severed. And to go from walking on the street to having a tremendous injury and be hurt is devastating to a family, to a community, to a point where you have to really say, okay, it's time, way time out to have this type of thing happen. And we need to get to a point where people are willing to step up, willing to get involved in every area, every aspect of the situation. So if you want to call in, you want to talk about it, we invite you to call in 347-324-5569. It's 347-324-5569. Again, we're talking about the things that were going on in Baltimore, talking about the life of black males in our society around the country, and how many times they are not given the justice that many of them deserve. And we want to make sure that this is not just a thing of, okay, when it dies down and goes out of the media, that we leave it alone. But we want to make sure that we remain a constant contact with our young black men, with our police department, with our local governments, with our local clergy, that we understand that we can't allow this to drop, can't allow this to fall. We can't allow this to go back under the radar, if you will. Now, looks like we have a caller on the line. Anytime we have a caller on the line tonight, what we'll do is we'll call out the last four digits of your phone number, and we'll get you on the line. Again, if you want to call in, make a comment, the number is 347-324-5569. We're going to go to a caller on the line. Last four digits is 6789. 6789. We're going to get you on the air. 6789, you there?
I'm there. This is Pastor Gregory.
Hey, Dr. G, how you doing, sir?
Well,
Good, good. We are grateful to have you on the air. This is pastor of the great New Birth Baptist Church in Washington, D.C., Dr. William Gregory. He is a co-host with us on Thursday night for our TNET Bible study. And was a great friend of mine, good pastor, awesome pastor, and one of my mentors. And appreciate you calling in and supporting us. Just wanted to give folks a place and a way to be able to share with the recent events that have happened in Baltimore surrounding the Freddie Gray killing. And we are just inviting people to just let us know how they feel, what they believe should happen, and what they're willing to do to help in this situation, short term and long term. And what I believe needs to happen is every area of the community, whether it's the media, whether it's the clergy, whether it's the police, whether it's the elected officials, that we have to make this a priority and keep it a priority like we do with so many of our big money-making things. Dr. G, do you want to chime in on that?
Well, I do agree with you because it's a shame that, and I think one of the brothers, when they were showing the reports of what was going on in Baltimore, you know, we only hear about the negative things. Every time something happens, they show the negative of what these little young black men are doing to be shot by the policemen. And then somewhere along the line, the police officers, because of the system, get off. And one thing about that whole business is the media, you know, and then a lot of times you find that the media, we're taking sides. You know, everything is always negative. And I think I heard someone talk about it, how there needs to be some positive things being shown from the media if we want things to change and keep it changed. Because everything that goes on in our society, negative. That's all the media ever talks about. But the good things that people are doing, especially you know, in our urban neighborhoods, you know, we never hear about it. And so it takes something like what happened in Baltimore to get people's attention. Mm-hmm. That's just a bad way that it has to be done.
Absolutely. You always hear the negative thing. And one of the things that I was talking to some people earlier is that even everybody has to take ownership of what's going on. The media, the clergy, local officials, family members, everyone has to take ownership of playing their role. It seems like we got through a great struggle with, you know, our recession, and now Wall Street is booming again. But Main Street, the Pennsylvania Avenue, the New York Avenue, and the urban areas, they haven't seen the recovery. It's like unemployment and people who invest in the community have pretty much forgotten about the Main Street, about the Pennsylvania Avenue, the New York Avenue, the West Virginia Avenues in the city. It seems like that is always going to be the last place to invest. As far as with education, as far as with jobs, as far as communities and stores and things of that nature.
And you're right. And, you know, just sitting here thinking about it, you know, people want change, but we're not willing to do anything to help the change. To give you an example, one way that we can affect the change is through voting. You know, a lot of these politicians, when we look at what our president is trying to do, but every turn he's, you know, he's up against a brick wall with programs and things that he wants to put in place to help some of these areas, because those that have won't. And then you take a look at, I think one of the good things that did come from this is the fact that you saw church leaders get out more from within the church. And, you know, what we try to do as far as to help our children is to understand that we can't sit in judgment on anything that they do. No, we don't condone, and we don't think that what those that did loot and steal and break in were right, but, you know, you got to understand why. And too often, you know, we're sitting in judgment on what folks are doing, but we're not doing anything to help it. One thing that we try to do in our church is that as these young folk come in, you put them to work, give them something meaningful to do, rather than sit in judgment and talk about they're not this. They wear their pants down below their waist, they do all of this, but utilize them and go beyond as Jesus did. He didn't sit in judgment, folk. You know, he reached out to help people. And, you know, until we can give them a better foundation, they're going to always be looked upon in the manner that they are. And as I was saying in the beginning, we've got to learn how to vote. When voting time comes around, we want change, put some folk in place that are going to help effect that change. Instead of sitting back talking about where there's no one to put in office, that's one of the worst things that we can do. So then when stuff like this happens, then we want to complain and point the finger.
Right. And you can't point that finger with any authority if you have not participated in your civic duty of voting.
Exactly.
And that is so true with so many people who have been given the right to vote, but have been blessed with it, and you know, many years blacks were disenfranchised from their vote with Jim Crow and all those other tactics, and even in today's society, with people putting roadblocks in the way of people voting easily and easy access. And so that's another one of the things that we need to do in order to help get people in office who will give voice to the situation of where we live.
Exactly.
One of the things that you touched on in regards to clergy getting out and not judging young people, it's so important for young people to be able to trust the leader. And what you said is that when you go out, you don't judge them for if they're sagging their pants, or if they have tattoos, or, you know, piercings or whatever. You can't judge them. You have to encourage them to live lives that are conducive to health in our community.
Exactly.
And, you know, everyone has a role to play, and if we and the clergy and the leaders stop looking down our noses and get out and get involved in the community, I believe then people would learn to trust their leadership and not say it's them against us.
Exactly. And, you know, along with that whole business, you know, we see so many of these mega churches and, you know, the traditions and all of these other things that we get into. But one thing that I've learned, you've got to get out and meet people where they are instead of always passing judgment on them. And as you said, you know, that there is a distrust within the spiritual community and people outside. You know, we talk about how we want to draw people to Christ and help make their lives better. But when the church is not doing anything other than what they had the programs, they raised their little money, but they're not doing anything outside of the church. They're not reaching out to help people. You know, we're just, it's all inside. And, you know, long as we're these fat pastors getting their little paychecks, we're content. But you got to reach people where they are. And then when you do get some of these folks to come in, you can't sit there and look at them as if, you know, they're the dirtiest things upon the face of the earth. Jesus communicated with them. He sat with them. He ate with them.
Yeah.
He showed them that what true love was. And until we as a people, especially we as clergy and the spiritual leaders, understand that, you know, it's not about big fancy cars. It's not about big fancy airports, planes, and all this stuff. It's about meeting people where they are. And that's something that we just have not done a good job, or we won't accept folk as they are. And, you know, we want them to be perfect. We want folk that are saved when they come into the church. But we forget, none of us started out as saved.
We were all sinners.
And
some of us were
doing just like these other folk are doing.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't by the grace of God, Lord knows where many of us would have been. But we forget that as we become more indoctrinated in the Word. And we've got to remember, as the Bible says, that we got to remember our first love.
That's right.
And get back to that foundation.
And that is the key, is that the love will cover a multitude of things. In other words, love never fails. It has a way of getting down to the most stoniest heart, the most divisive racism, the most divisive cultures, the most divisive bigotry. It has a way of getting down and causing people who have huge differences come together through expressing love instead of hate. And that's what we got to get together, is a community that loves each other, that loves people in the community. And when people begin to experience that love, then you can make a change. Because when the heart changes, then people can see changes in their communities. Looks like we got another caller on the line. We're going to call 1741. We're going to get you on the line. 1741, you're on the line. Good evening.
Good evening, Pastor Kason.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you all?
I'm doing well.
Good.
We got Dr. Gregory on the line with us.
Good evening, Pastor Gregory.
Hello, Minister Lindsay. How are you?
I'm doing good, thank you.
Good.
We were just discussing about the role the clergy has to play as far as helping people in our community trust us as leaders, in particular the area of young black males and people in general in our community. And we were just asking people, as they called in today, if they would share with us what they think we should do as far as getting to a point where we can be trusted to be able to play our role in the area of young men and women of all ages in our community. Do you have anything to share with us on that, Minister Lindsay?
Well, I think that we need to try to build up a trust. And also listen to what people, young people, or whatever ages they might be, what they are trying to say to us, and try to look at different ways where we can come together and settle our differences. Try to seek more of a peaceful mode as opposed to violence. Even though you might not agree with some of the things that people think or do, we still have to try to come to a solution where we can reconcile our differences in a peaceful manner.
Amen. Amen. Well, we thank you for your comment tonight. I know it's been a long day for you. I know this is about round four in ministry, but we appreciate you calling in and your comment. So let's continue to pray that God will give us the wisdom and the direction that we need to go in to make positive change in our community. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pastor. Good night.
All right.
Good night.
We have another caller on the line, 389. 2389, you're on the air. Are you with
me? Oh, hi. Pastor, this is Sharon. I just now got to dial in, so I didn't get too much of what the subject matter was, but I can pretty much assume what it is. Since we're talking about their dealings in Baltimore.
Yeah.
And I really don't see a peaceful solution until and unless the police start checking each other. I think that, in my opinion, we can file lawsuits and we can march, but until they start checking each other.
Amen.
Because I know in the line of work that I was in, if my coworker did a bad job, all of us got it. So the complaints that came into my company came down on all of us. I really can't think in my mind that out of all of the officers involved, that at least one of them didn't want to at least check on this young man. But that code of, that blue, that brotherhood of blue, to look after each other, they probably wanted to, at least one of them probably wanted to, but didn't want to go against the grain. There are a lot of officers in my family. I hear them talk. They would go through holy you know what if they were to tell on each other or try to stop one of the others from doing anything or even talk about it, really. So that silence is not helpful. The distrust that has built in the community, the young people, they're not so young, but minorities in particular.
Yeah,
that distrust just drives. And then lately, when you turn on the TV and all that you hear is someone of color has been gunned down. Now, this is not to minimize other people who have been gunned down or even police officers who have been gunned down. But most people pay more attention to things that affect them and those who are like them.
Right.
So from my perspective, since I am a person of color, those are the ones I pay more attention to. If I had a son, and I tell my son, if someone with a badge, whatever the color, stops you, okay, you give that person the utmost respect. But when you see, and then it's not new, but when you see that even that does not guarantee that you're going to walk away healthy or alive.
That's right. That's right.
Then this young man ran. Under the circumstances, you really can't blame him. And because that person happens to have had a record, a lot of people are saying it was his fault. Well, I'll say to those people, if you have any family at all, I'm willing to bet that at least one of them have a record.
Exactly.
If that person was stopped for any reason and something goes wrong and that person doesn't come out of it alive and someone says, hey, the person had a record, that person's a thug, that person's this, that, and the third, how would you feel? So my heart goes out to both sides in this, but I still go back to the police officers want trust with the neighborhood. The neighborhood would benefit from trust from both sides, but it's got to start somewhere. And I think that you know which of your coworkers are hot-headed, trigger-happy, or whatever.
True.
So unless you do something, And I understand that those who want to do something are afraid to do something because of the repercussions.
Yeah.
But it's got to start somewhere.
Let me ask you this question. As far as with the police, it's almost like the police have a quasi-gang mentality themselves as far as when it comes to snitching or turning the finger on their own. I know a lot of times with gangs, if you snitch or tell on the gang, then you're likely to lose your life. So it's almost like that gang mentality is the police gang or that the blue gang where everyone has to stay close.
You don't
get fall in rank, or you know, it's a good possibility your family or your reputation is going to get destroyed. And so, you know, it's a catch 22 where you say you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. If I do say something, I'm getting in trouble. If I don't say something, I'm going to get in trouble. So I'll go with the game. And unfortunately, there's no easy way out of this other than to put things in place where when these things happen, that there are protections for everyone involved.
Right.
That if you say something, you won't face that type of repercussion.
This is true, but, you know, to me it comes down to expectations. When you think about gangs, and gangs come in different colors or whatnot, but you think of expectations, snitches get stitches and all of that. But with someone who's sworn to protect and serve, has a badge and is authorized to use a gun, you have different expectations from them. That badge gives you the authority to shoot if you feel threatened. But when you live in a country where a certain set of people you consider a threat just by them being, then that becomes a different expectation from you. I expect you to put your personal feelings aside. I expect those around you, your peers especially, if they see you putting your personal feelings in front of your duty as a sworn officer, they just going to have to check you. I mean, I don't know if you want to call it snitching or not, but you are authorized. You have a badge. That gives you authority.
Yeah.
And what I expect from a gang member and what I expect from officers is just two different things. Either way, I know that if you tell, there are going to be repercussions.
Right.
But with one, your peers gather around you and form a wall. The truth may never come out and you can walk away. That ain't going to happen with a gang member. If somebody calls in anonymously and gives them the right information, they're going to go get that person. If it happens with an officer, a lot of times, most times, they found a way to cover it up, or the grand jury is just going to say, let them walk.
Right.
And that's where the mistrust comes in. It's like these people are not gang members, but they're supposed to be upholding the law and equal justice under the law. And I think that is what causes the lava, if you will, that runs to come up and explode when these things happen, is because there's a certain expectation for the police not to act like the common gang member. But yet there is a type of gang that has the authority to be able to use force and to be able to justify it in many cases, even if it's not justifiable. And they're in cahoots with prosecutors and the system. So there's more of an easy way for that kind of power to manipulate the system. It's difficult. Dr. Gregory, I'm going to let you jump in here.
Well, you know, you're right. I was sitting here listening, and I was thinking, with what the the Attorney General did with in Baltimore. She didn't go the route of the grand jury. She went to an independent group. And because the system is in place and they're going to protect the police officers, regardless of what they do or how it comes down. And this is one of the problems that we have right now. What got me after the announcement was made about the charges that were being brought, the Fraternal Order of Police got on and said these police officers will be proven that they did nothing wrong. Now, all of social media have shown what has taken place, and yet folk can still sit up here and talk about what the police officers did, that there was nothing wrong. And I think Sharon is right. You know, there has to be something put in place where not only are we as citizens, checked out and, you know, a system that we're checked upon, but there has to be something that the police officers, political officials, everybody, because there are certain ones that if you have the money, if you're in certain positions, you're going to get all free rather than serve your time or being judged in the way that you should be. And that's the kind of society that went. That's why I take it back to when we talk about voting. We've got to stop sitting on our buns of do nothing, talking about there's nobody to vote for. We need to take a look at these candidates, and we need to make sure we're putting people in place that are going to do what they say they're going to do. This 35-year-old woman has gotten in that, and I'm sure that there are going to be days where her life is going to be in danger simply because she's taken a stand to do what's right. And somewhere along the line, this is what more people, more officials have got to do. But I'm glad to see it has started with someone, because we're at a point now, and if you recall, all of us remember, PG County at one time used to have a very bad reputation when it came to police officers. Whether you're black, white, Chinese, it didn't matter. But
you're right about that.
Things have changed. So I think Sister Gregory wanted to say something, too. She's been bending my ear all day.
All right.
Hey, Pastor C, but I just wanted to, I agree with what everyone has said, and I just wanted to add another perspective as far as how we all can help and help to give these young people hope. Right now, when people in an urban community, from the moment they're born, they're born at a disadvantage because they don't have the opportunities that everyone else has. They don't have the community centers. That yes, there's grants and everything to go to college, but if you don't have the same type of school system that everyone else has, if the money's being cut not to funnel so they can have upgraded books, they can have computers, they have community centers that after they go to school can do after-school activities, which gives them the hope to look beyond their situation. And that's where a lot of people can come into play. And one of the things that I was really observing and I was talking to Pastor G about was, you know, you had a lot of businesses that were right in on the harbor, which is just one block over from where the urban is versus the harbor, they were complaining about the curfew. And they were complaining about the curfew because they were saying they were losing money. They were going to lose money because of the baseball gangs lose money because of the fight, because of all of that. And to me, okay, actually that's a good thing, because now maybe all that extra money that you're getting, maybe you'll sponsor some little leagues. Maybe you'll invest. There was a center that had to close because there wasn't enough money being given to the city to continue to keep it and keep it up growing. Well, maybe some of these businesses that are bringing in big money will take some of that money to help build, take some of those old empty warehouses and build a community center so that there can be after-school programs, so that it'll be another option of either staying on the streets or getting into the gang or going to jail. And then you get an arrest record, and then you can't get a job. So, you know, it's going to take everybody, but to me, it sent a message, putting that curfew in place and letting those businesses feel it. Then it was like, oh, you know what? We need to help our neighbor. So to me, everybody needs to jump in.
Absolutely. We definitely feel that everyone has to put some skin in the game. You know, when you start putting skin in the game, that means that you're invested in the community. Mm-hmm. And like you said, with the expectation, like Sharon was saying, with the expectation of the officers, there should be an expectation from the community.
It should be an expectation
to say, I'm two blocks away from this thing, and I see these people in abject poverty on a daily basis, but the Inner Harbor is booming. You know, what can I do to come out on a regular basis to help these people, give these people a hand up as far as with continuing education, as far as with job training, as far as with housing, to see. It's one thing to say that, you know, they are there and they're in this situation, but it's another thing to say that you are there, but what can we all do to help you to not only get out of there, but to stay out of there.
Right.
And I think that's the kind of hope that people need to see, that thing of community getting involved and helping community, policing community.
Right.
And when you talk to police officers, they always say when the community can help police, that's when the community and the police are working together, that's where you see the biggest changes. I didn't want to leave you out of the conversation. Sharon, you still there?
I'm still here.
Okay. Anything you wanted to chime in on?
Oh. No, I was thinking about what Reverend G said about the FOP.
Mm-hmm.
It surprised me. I'm going to say it really did surprise me that they took the stance that they did. Because when it's right in your face that things were not done properly,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to defend them anyway, it just drives point home that I was saying, mm-hmm. that blue cover. And even if they had body cameras, we already saw what happened in New York.
Uh-huh.
That
mm-hmm.
didn't make a difference.
Nope.
And that officer clearly committed a crime by using an illegal chokehold. That was all
mm-hmm.
caught on camera. It
uh-huh.
didn't matter. And until things like that are, fixed, then when our young men get these programs or whatever, young men, I say young men, but I'm sorry, that's the majority of what's being affected right now. But
mm-hmm.
go to college, come out, get in business, wear your suit, you still going to get pulled over.
That's right.
Still going to get profiled. You still run the risk of not making it home to your family.
Uh-huh.
So those things are very important, and we must have them because education is the key. But
absolutely.
To me, number one is fixing this problem between the community and the police.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I think also that they have too much leeway.
Yes, they do.
They have too much leeway. I think that since they do have their book of rules,
uh-huh.
but it leaves too much to their choice.
Right.
And it's a shame that they're going to have to be treated like children, but they're going to need a step-by-step instruction on what to do from A to Z.
That's right.
Because as long as things are left to their discretion and as long as they have their time to cover
mm-hmm.
it up, and I know social media has got a lot of bad things about it.
Yeah.
But I'm so glad that so many people walk around with their cameras these days, so otherwise
they'll
be getting away with stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just going to have to start there to me.
Absolutely. It's a thing of those people, if there's enough people that are going to come forward and say, hey, you know, you might not like me, you might not want me to be on your police force anymore, but if it's enough police officers that have the interests of the community at heart and come forward and begin to start saying, hey, this is the right thing to do, and that we're in a position to make a change. It was interesting when you talk about New York when they were going through the killings of the police officers that were gunned down in New York. Some of the police officers turned their back on the mayor, and some of the police officers stood with them.
Uh-huh.
It was interesting what the FOP did in those areas. But it seems like there's some that want to come forward and say, hey, yeah, I want to do the right thing. And then there's some that want to stick with the old boy. You know, we're going to stick together, wrong or right. And,
right.
Let me see. We got another caller on the line. Let's see if we can get 6375. 6375, you're on the air.
Pastor C, how are you? This is Rev B, man.
Rev B, how you doing, sir? Good to have you on tonight. Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Yeah,
okay.
We have Sister Sharon and Pastor G and Sheila G on the line, and we were just talking about how the Fraternal Order of Police came out and just immediately backed the officers, and it seems like they weren't in touch with what was shown on social media.
Right, correct. Yeah, you know, it's a sad situation to see what's going on in Baltimore, but, you know, this is nothing new as far as, you know, just the seriousness of the relationship between black men in America and the police. I mean, you know, it's something that, you know, just been going on for years. And, you know, you can look at any decade, you know, in our country and see that there's always been an incident, you know, of a great magnitude, you know, regarding, you know, the police and black males. You know, during my time, of course, you know, back in 92, it was, you know, it was Rodney King and, you know, and the LAPD. You can go back into the, you know, go back to the early 80s when you talk about, you know, some of the civil activist groups in Philadelphia and the Philadelphia Police Department. You know, so there have always been examples of, you know, just the strained relationship between, you know, African-American men in particular and the police. And I think, you know, this is just another example of that. But I think now, you know, we are able to really see what's going on because social media is so big, you know.
Yeah.
And, if it wasn't for cameras, you know, on cell phones, you know, none of this probably would have never even been able to be, you know, be seen, whether it was the incident in Baltimore or the young man, you know, in New York or, you know, young man in Ferguson or, you know, so, and even with Rodney King, I mean, during that time, he had a home video recorder that had it all on tape, but, you know, you think about, you know, the other incidences that weren't recorded. So this is, you know, this is nothing unusual for, you know, for our society. But I just think, you know, it's really sad that, you know, it still continues. And, you know, it's almost like our voices are not being heard because you're saying what else has to happen in order for changes to take place in society, especially with, you know, especially with the relationships that we have with police officers, even myself, you know, I can give examples of how I felt like, you know, I was profiled out and, you know, police, you know, telling you, you know, asking you questions that, you know, you feel like, are you accusing me of something? You know, so,
right.
You know, it's definitely a strained relationship. And I think now we really see that a lot of our African-American men really have no respect for, you know, for police authority. You know, they'd rather just be confronted, you know, and instead of just kind of being submissive and say, well, let me just do what I need to do so this, you know, so this doesn't escalate to something greater. But I think that, you know, our communities are saying, you know, we've had enough, and it definitely should be some changes made in society. But I think the sad part about it is that, you know, when we do get to the point where we've had enough, I think that, you know, the media has made it look like, you know, we're still just a bunch of ignorant people that are just throwing rocks and burning
right.
down CPSs in our own community. But I said that was only a handful of people. But, of course, that snippet will make it look like it's all of the community, and it's not, because there were and there have been for the past few days people in Baltimore who have been, you know, protesting in an appropriate manner and speaking out appropriately and have not been a disgrace to the city or a disgrace to their race.
Yeah, and it seems like that loop of the criminal aspect always gets the front page, always gets the news. It's a continual loop. And what I think needs to happen is the people that have invested in the city and have invested in the young people, we have to demand that the media make a loop of that on a continuous basis of the Elijah Cummings, the pastors that make it a difference. There needs to be a loop of that. But it doesn't seem like that gets much play. Dr. G, can you comment on that?
No, you're absolutely right. It takes something like what has happened in Baltimore, okay, for number one, for folks to come out, and then the media is just going to focus on the negative until they get caught, and then they'll turn it on, because I forgot who it was, one of the young politicians up in Baltimore, that they came out and they talked about the media and how the media will focus only on the negative until something goes on. And you're right. You know, we live in a time where, I hate to say it, but negative stuff seems to sell. It makes money.
Ratings.
And it you know, those ratings, because they're focusing on the negative. You get a person shot, and it's always us that get shot, but you never hear anything about the other side. And you can't tell me they're not doing anything. So it's a cycle, but everything is aimed at people of color, because they do live in those poor neighborhoods, and the media does not help. And showing only the negative. And really, you know, in a way, I'm kind of glad that those folk, not that they went looting and all, but they got a chance to tell folk, well, look, our schools don't have any books. You know, we don't have writing material. But yet, on the other side of the tracks, they got all that and some. So it's you know, one of those things where we live in a time where the media shows, they focus on the negative and not the positive things that are going on.
And it's like the ratings is what they're looking for, to be the first to have the scoop, the first to run the loop. And, you know, I think a lot of times people buy into that, and that helps hype it.
Yeah.
But what I think is missing, and I think we need more of, is to see what it is to be backed into a corner and to feel hopelessness. I don't think a lot of people in the media, I don't think a lot of people in the surrounding communities understand what it is to be born into abject poverty and feel like you don't have any hope and feel like you can't win. And even when you do it the right way, you get beat down. And, you know, I can be the president of the United States. I'm still getting pulled over and being called a boy. Rev B, what is it like to be pulled over and still be, you know, you're a productive citizen of society, you're obeying the rules, and still to be called, you know, like you're a slave or less than a citizen, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite upsetting. I mean, you know, but unfortunately, you know, these police officers have a profile in which they operate on. So, you know, they assume that, you know, if you're male and, you know, you're driving a foreign car or you're driving a nice looking car, that, you know, that can't be. So, you know, there's always, you know, there's always going to be that issue where a lot of times you just feel that, you know, you're being, you know, pulled over because you're being profiled, you know. And, I mean, it's happening all the time where, you know, I've been asked by police officers, is this your car? Do you live at this address? Mm-hmm. Do you have insurance? I've even had a police officer say, do you have any drugs or drug paraphernalia in here? You know, and, you know, sometimes you just have to shake your head and just kind of laugh off, you know, just laugh to yourself because you're saying, you know, is he really pulling me over, asking me all of this, you know, and you know, and just accusing me of just doing something wrong. But, you know, unfortunately, that's just the society that we live in, and that, you know, being a young black man in America, you know, you're always going to be under some type of observation. You're always going to be questioned about, you know, where you're going, or, you know, who you're with, or where you live. And I'm sure, even, you know, in the same case with Freddie Gray, I'm sure that he's had some negative prior to, you know, the few weeks ago, you know. So he probably said, you know what, I'm not going to stay around and, you know, let these police beat on me, or let these police question me without any probable cause or any reason. And I think that happens to a lot of black men in this country. And that's why the relationship is so tense, because at what point in time do you say, when am I going to stand up and say, I'm not going to let these police officers take advantage of me and, you know, and beat me? I mean, and you look, you know, all of these men that have lost their lives have had prior relationships with the police that were that weren't positive ones. And so, you know, on the days they lost their lives, they say, you know what, I'm going to stand up today and be like, you know what, I'm not going to be abused anymore. I'm not going to be mistreated. But unfortunately, in that stance, they lost their lives. And, you know, and we see what a black, what the value of a black man's life is in America. It means absolutely nothing, you know. And, you know, it's sad that, you know, your life is not valued because of the color of your stigmatism that goes with it. You know, these police officers, some of them just feel they can just say whatever and do whatever.
Right.
And that, you know, the fraternal order of police will back them up, you know.
Right.
And
I guess, right or wrong.
Yeah, right or wrong, you know. And, I mean, it's sad. I mean, I was just reading something the other day, Pastor C, where, you know, there have been almost 200 police shootings this year, and as of today, nobody has been charged with anything. So this thing
that's
in Baltimore.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that we've learned from just the city of Baltimore is how much money had to be paid out for police wrongdoing. And so like so many cases, I forget what the $1 million amount was. And so it affects everybody in the community. Even if you're on the other side of the track, if you will, that, you know, your city is paying millions of dollars because of the police don't have any act right. And Sheila G's still on the line. Sheila G, you remember back in the 80s when I was ran into police brutality because I was in a secluded area, mistaken identity. Somebody had passed a car in the same color that I had. And, you know, the police, this was when it was really racism in Oxon Hill, Maryland. And because I wouldn't stop on the dark side of the road and went to a lighted area where there was a lot of people, the police wanted to grab me and throw me out my car and try to tow my car and, you know, try to send me to the lockup. And you know, fortunately, our parents had the ability to be able to hire an attorney and to be able to deal with it. But it still, that left a mark on me for years. Not just physically, but mentally, of being treated wrongly because of who I was. And when the guy took my driver's license, he said, what are you doing in this part of the county? And I was only like 3 miles away from my home. You know, it's like, what are you doing? You're in the wrong place. You know, you're a long way from home, boy, or whatever. You know, and it's like, well, I'm only 3 miles away. I'm driving legally. I'm minding my business. You made the mistake. And because I didn't stop in the secluded place where you wanted me, where you could have beat my head in and killed me, and I went to a place, you know, around the block where there was light and there was other people where you couldn't get away with that. Now you're pissed off. Now you're mad. And it was so ironic. The police was a black and a white police. So it's not the kind of thing of whether it's just blacks police or white police, but it's, it's that blue, what Sharon was talking about, it's that blue cover that you know, it's like us against the community. So the police hate the community that they're supposed to serve. Sheila,
Yeah, I definitely remember that time. And Dad used to call it DWB, Driving While Black. And, you know, being with having brothers during that time, and as well as when I was in high school, when I was first in college, it was just known in PG, if you got stopped and you were black, especially if you were a male, you do not go to a secluded place. I went to high school with people that when they got stopped, and they got beat up. They got beat up. Their parents had to pick them up. They got arrested for doing nothing. And that's why it makes it so difficult, because now you have an arrest record on some, just because you were DWB. And then when you're trying to do something or get a job, then you have that on your record. So then it becomes a vicious cycle. But I definitely remember during that time where it was a PG cop. And you're right. It was black and white. It was just like this code that if you saw especially a black male, that they're doing something wrong. And so many of my friends and my, you know, my brothers and everything, you all would get stopped just because. And it took the community. It took people like our folks and the civic associations going out to the businesses, voting, as Pastor G said. We got to get involved in that voting, changing our leadership to kind of weed that type of thing out. But, yeah, it was a type of thing where, no, you did not stop. Just like that young man, y'all had to run because at least go to a place where there were multiple people. But if you got caught by yourself, it was all over and there was nothing you could do about it. But again, the community, the businesses, like I said, those businesses that lost money, they need to take that money that they lost, take it as a lesson, invest in some community, help get some of those books in those schools, some computers, some after-school programs, Little League games. Take those empty warehouses, just like they got built the harbor up after 2008, and they lost so much money because people weren't traveling. Mm-hmm. That money that's coming back in their pocket, they need to put in the community beyond the harbor.
That's right.
And if I could, I've got a golf, but I just wanted to, I think Reverend B had mentioned something about we as people of color, but you know what? If you think about it, even the president has had to undergo racist attitudes, comments. I mean, even that State of the Union that year, and that Republican yelled out, "You're a liar." You know, if you're black, you're going to face some sort of criticism, and especially if you're a male. But we too have to be as smart as our president is. And if you take a look at how he's dealt with it, I think that's a good example of what we need to do. And he is trying to make changes. But every turn, everything that he tries, he's being blocked by the Republicans and some of his own Democrats. But I do thank you all.
I appreciate you. All right. We'll talk to you
all
later.
All right. Good night.
All right. Hey, Rev B, what What I really want to touch on just a little bit is how many years it took for me to get to the point where I no longer had this anger toward the police because of my encounter. I don't even know how many years it was. It was just so negative, and it was so hurt because I was hurt for doing nothing wrong, for not doing anything wrong, and it was unjustified. What that did to me affected the way I dealt with police and society. Can you talk about how that plays in the community when people have been wrong for no reason, Debbie?
I mean, you bring up a great point, but I mean, all it takes is one bad experience, you know, and I think one bad experience would change your outlook on everything, because the reality is the way our mind is, if we've had one bad experience with a police officer, then we're going to assume that every time we are in some type of, you know, confrontation with the police officer, it's going to be negative. And so that always heightens, your feeling of, you know, hostility and your feeling of anger. And I'm sure that, you know, what a lot of black men feel, you know, across the country is that every time, you know, they're confronted with a police officer, they're on the defense or on edge because they've had bad experiences in the past. And I don't really think, you know, that really leaves you. And if it does, it really takes a long time to heal, because once you've been done wrong by somebody that, you know, is supposed to protect and to serve, you know, the community, and you've been beaten down or falsely accused or whatever, you know, it takes a long time for that wound to heal. And for a lot of black men especially, that wound never heals. Because it almost never fails that, you know, every time they're in, you know, confronted by the police, it turns out being negative. So it's like, you know, a cycle that just keeps playing over and over and over again. And, you know, and it's really upsetting to see the strained relationship between police officers and, you know, and young black men, whether they're, you know, white police officers, whether they're African American, whether they're
right,
or bad, it doesn't even matter, because to black men, it's the badge and the uniform. You know, that's what they see. They see the badge and the uniform, and they say, this could turn out to be something that, you know, I really don't want to experience. But, you know, it happens. I mean, and it's happening all over. You know, I've had students that I've worked with that have been harassed by the police, and, you know, right here, you know, right here in Montgomery County. So don't just think that it's a inner city thing or it's a big city thing. Country, from the smallest of communities to the, you know, to the large, you know, inner cities like New York, Chicago, L.A.
That's
you know, it's happening. It's happening everywhere, and you know, and I guess we're at a loss because we're saying, where do we start with healing this broken relationship between the police and the community? You know, because that's really what it is. It's a broken relationship between the police and the community, because the communities don't trust the police anymore. You know, people would rather say, I deal with it myself before I call on the police.
And
you know. Yeah, and then when it gets to that point, you have to see something needs to be done. And so, you know, I think now, you know, we're asking ourselves, okay, once Baltimore dies down, and you know, New York has died down, and Ferguson has died down, and LA died down, we say now, what is the next step? What do we need to do? Because, you know, we don't need another person to die at the hands of the police. What are we going to do to prevent this from happening? So what will the next step be, you know? And I think now is where we start to have the dialogue between the community, you know, and our political leaders, you know, our community leaders and activists and whatever. And I think, you know, last Monday was just, you know, to me, it was just a sign of frustration. That's what that was.
Yeah.
People were upset. That's all that was. People were just blatantly upset. They said, we've been here in Baltimore and these inner cities for years, and, you know, we can't get a job. We can't get adequate health care. You know, our school systems are terrible. We can't get, you know, qualified teachers in here to teach our kids. We don't have, you know, proper learning material. We don't have we don't have air conditioning. You know, I mean, just all of these different things. Nobody's investing in the community. You know, buildings are still run down and abandoned and burnt down from, you know, 68 when King was assassinated and never, you know, these buildings were never, you know, rebuilt. So, you know, Baltimore has a lot of, you know, a lot of underlining history that, you know, have some wounds almost 50 years later, you know, in these black communities that nobody ever talks about. I mean, you know, the harbor is cool. You know, that's nice. That's a nice attraction. But guess what? That's not the real Baltimore. You know what I'm saying?
The Raven Stadium and Camden Yard, you know, they pack out and do good business down there. But where's the help? Where's the hope? And what I call Monday is the lava coming to the top. The lava's always been there. Hot magma.
Oh yeah. Boiling. Yeah, it was brewing. It was brewing. Yep.
And what happened Monday is it erupted. It erupted. Mm-hmm. And so you can pretend that it's not there, but when it comes out, it's nasty. It's devastating when it erupts. It is nothing pleasant. But you got to address this underlying current of heat and hatred and feeling of mistrust and hopelessness. You know, I just like to flip it around that, you know. You know, one person having a bad relationship with the police can affect them for the rest of their life. But if you flip it around, one police officer having a bad incident with a community, a citizen in society, whether they're black or white or whoever, that can affect them too. I go back to the O.J. Simpson case where one of the officers, I believe it was Mark Furman, had bad relationship with black people, and so he tainted the O.J. Simpson case, you know. And it's just, you know, one thing after another. When you have bad encounters from the police with the society, or with society with the police, that there has to be some type of way for us to come together and mend relationships that have been broken. It's hard to go to someone that's hit you in the mouth And to settle down and say, I know you hit me in my mouth, but I want to try to get past this and work on something that's going to bring us back together. And that's the difficulty. That's where the hard work is involved. And I mean by hard work is it's not going to go away overnight. It's not going to change overnight. People have to be willing to get in the trenches and do the hard work day in and day out. And I think that was so frustrating with some of the local vendors who have invested in the community, who had built stores, who have stuck it out, is that the people that they invested in, because of this anger, they took it out on the nearest person that's next to them. And I think that was difficult for them to deal with. But it's going to take hard work. It's going to take, you know, not just one show or one TV program or one broadcast and move on to the next one, but it's going to take the majority of the community getting in, repairing the fences, getting over being punched in the mouth, and doing the hard work. I mean, it took hard work to get Prince George's County back to the place where people had confidence in the local police. It's not where it should be, but it's better than what it was in the late 70s and early 80s. But it took years and decades to make change, and that's what I want to say to people tonight is it's not going to happen overnight. It has to happen with you involved to do this day in and day out to affect the change. Otherwise, it's just going to, again, blow up somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, and and it's almost like, you know, when will the next incident occur? You know, what city will it be in? And, you know, but, I mean, it's happening all over the place. I mean, this is like just almost every week, you know, you just have another thread of some form of, you know, police brutality and, you know, somebody's life being lost or, you know, somebody, you know, mistakenly being shot or whatever. And it's just like every week you just see it happening over and over and over again. And you say to yourself, how much more needs to happen before we really to make some serious changes, you know? And, you know, I think a lot of it just has to do with, you know, the fact that, you know, there are a lot of leaders in, you know, in some of these positions that really don't even care about what goes on in a lot of the communities. You know, people, you know, there are a lot of people that don't care about what really goes on in the city of Baltimore or, you know, the inner city of, you know, some of our areas in D.C. or some of our areas in Prince George County or, you know, whatever. They don't care. You know, they really do not care. And you see the evidence of that is because nobody's really investing in these communities. They're not putting things in these communities that give these people hope. You know, they're not bringing businesses into, like, Park Heights of Baltimore or Druid Hill of Baltimore that, you know, have been, you know, on the bottom for years. You know, you don't see them building new Walmarts or new Targets or places that will bring in, generate revenue for the community, but also give jobs to the people in these communities. You know, you don't really, you don't really see that. I think now you're starting to see some of that in PG. You know, with the harbor being here, and that's really brought about
metro extension,
extension and increased revenue and increased jobs for people. But look how long it took, though. You know, so exactly. You know, so you're saying to yourself, you know, we have to start somewhere because we know that this is going to be a long process before we really start to see the change. But we want it to get better before it gets worse.
Absolutely. Well, we are just grateful for this time of conversation. And Sharon, you still on the line, Sharon?
Yes.
Hey, you like to say hello to Rev B?
Hey.
How you doing? Good evening to you.
Doing good.
So,
you know what
Sharon,
I want to say also? You know, I just want to say we are human like that. We tend to respond to how we are treated. You know, I have been questioned twice about neighbors who have applied for government jobs. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the procedure is when you apply to be an officer of the law, but I think they need to be vetted better than what they've been doing. If you apply to a regular job, say in some corporation, they're going to go on your Facebook page. They're going to question people who know you. And it's to me that if they did that more with jobs of this importance, they can weed out the ones that they, you know, some mentalities just don't match badge and gun.
Right. I knew that's right.
So if they, and they might, I don't know if they do. I'm just looking at the evidence. I don't think they do. And if they're questioning anybody, it's the people that they told them to question. You know, you're going to ask for references. You got to go beyond those references. So, I don't know.
Well, I want to try to get, I told this young lady I was going to try to get her on the line. That's my my aunt Violet. She worked for the Justice Department for 30 years. She always has an interesting word to say, so I'm going to try to get her on the line before we close out tonight. If anybody wants to chime in, they'll be listening online. As always, you can dial in at 347-324-5569. That's 347-324-5569, and tell us about how you feel, what's going on with the incidents that are going on in Baltimore, and just let us know how you feel. We're going to just continue to have this conversation on a monthly basis so people will have a place to share what's going on, what they're doing in their community, how they are experiencing or not experiencing positive change in their communities. And so we're going to try to get her on the line. Hold on a second. Let me dial this number to get her on and see, get some of this Justice Department wisdom that she has going on. If we can get her on the line.
Hello.
Ms. Randall, how you doing?
Yes.
Hello.
I'm fine. Yes.
Yeah, we're on the radio, and we're talking about the incidents that happened in Baltimore. We were talking about what it's going to take for the community, as far as the police, as far as the community, to get together and to mend the broken relationship of distrust between the community and the police and the media, what it's going to take to bring the sides together. And we know you work for the Justice Department for over 30 years, and so we wanted to get you on the line and see what your opinion was as far as what it's going to take to mend the broken relationship in regards to the community, the police, and our politicians and our media.
When you look at what just took place in Baltimore, it's a sad situation, and it's the burden lies on all parties involved. First, you got to recognize none of us are exempt from breaking the law, but the people that are in authority that break the law, that mistreat the people, that mistreat the community, and it's been known that prejudice is prevalent against our black men, our black communities, and people, black people as a whole, because I worked in civil rights. I worked in civil rights when it was in the 60s, the early 60s, 65 and on up. It's a sad situation. Until we can eliminate the prejudice that exists in America, and it goes both ways, but it's more on blacks than whites. They're in the authority to do it and get away with it. And this young generation is not like the old generation. That tolerance for this foolishness is not going to work. It's not going to work. But that's what it took to get the attention of the media, the churches, the lawmakers, and everybody involved in America. That's why it escalated into the other different states, because it's everywhere. None of these states in the United States, except the ones that predominantly white states, go through this, because they have been known to brutalize our black men and get away with it, until they can go in there and just not do a lot of lip service and talking and punish these people, open the doors for our children to get a good education, and know right from wrong. They even criticize the lady that beat her son. God knows I'd have done the same thing. But at the time, her, the height that he had disobeyed her, and she just went off because it didn't have to be. Another son told, another father told his son not to go, and he went, and he got locked up. So it's a broad, this thing is so broad. And if you're not out there in it and see it and know it, it's hard to visualize or judge who's right and who was wrong. Because at the time when you saw this man being brutalized by the authorities, that's everybody's not, we don't think of the same. We don't rationalize the same. These young kids are off the chain. And they put this marijuana and all this stuff out there. The minds are not functioning anyway. And that just makes it escalate. And these people that are in authority, they have that in their mind. But until they can honestly do that job, do it right, the community comes in, the ministers, the clergy, the people that are voted into political positions, all the things that they say that they promise people that they're going to do and don't do, they got to be tested and put it into place to show talk is cheap.
That's right.
All these mayors, all these governors, look at Spiro Agnew, who was governor of Maryland, one of the biggest racists that ever was. He ended up being the vice president of the United States. Went down in grace with Nixon. Why? It was in him. He never changed. Should have never had the position. But until these people realize the fault and the harm that they're human beings, good citizens, you're not going to get nothing but that. Talk is cheap.
That's right.
They got this. And now they are upset because they got a black mayor, black state attorney. She has a, he's highly educated, highly qualified to do the job. And now, instead of them looking at what she did, how they strategized it, because they don't know what she has. She has an ace in the hole, but she's not going to show that.
Right.
And they are criticizing her already before due process has ever taken place. But that's the white man, and you can see through that. You can see through that, where they're coming from. Yes, they have the police and have a union, but the union is not going to back up something wrong. You have an innocent man that should have never been arrested. I'll die in the hands of the authorities. Like I said, the man can't break his own spine. He can't sever his own spine. He was healthy when he was arrested, which he should have never been arrested. But they threw every charge that they could throw in there. They got to be guilty of some of it. In other words, you're not going to get away with it.
Right.
If you aren't educated and aware of the legal process, you're going to think a whole bunch of things. And they're going to have to change. Not just Baltimore, but these whole United States. They just can't continue to kill our black children and get away with it.
And get away.
They can't be exempt because they carry a badge and a gun. It's ridiculous for them. This man that killed this guy with his gun and saw he had his taser.
Yeah.
He never convinced me that you can tell the weight of a gun from a taser.
That's right.
And he wasn't qualified. He was a volunteer. And he gets permission to go on a big vacation out of town. Black man would have had to, but still be in jail, would not have been given no kind of bond or anything. But you could say is what went on was wrong. That they did, they looted and did all of this, but at the height of what took place, enough is enough. And it was just at that peak where they went ballistic.
Yeah.
They went ballistic. So it's a touchy situation. Two wrongs don't make a right. But God knows they got some folks' attention.
And like you said, enough is enough. And
enough
I think
is
that was one
enough.
Of the things that President Obama said when the Senate held up Loretta Lynch is
mm-hmm.
a confirmation for
yes.
so long. And you can
yes.
see right through it that it was just political.
Exactly. Exactly.
He went out and he said, enough is enough.
Exactly. And now they're
and
kind of holding
a week later. A week later, after they had been exposed, he had to put them out there. It's a shame that they had to be exposed and put out there to say, you know, stop doing wrong. Enough is enough.
Exactly.
And I think that is what America is starting to see,
mm-hmm.
sort of like when they
shifted,
saw when
they've shifted
when they
the blame
saw
off of
the. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
They have shifted the blame on the looters and the troublemakers. All of them weren't protesters. Some of them were bad people. But the thing about
mm-hmm.
it is, it would not have ever taken place if the policemen would have done their job and done it properly, following regulations, policies, procedures that under the law that says
right.
you have the right to arrest somebody.
Right.
The man did not fit any of the policies that he should have been arrested at all. At all. And the focus has gotten off of a dead man over a store that was burned down.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Exactly.
It
shifts the focus, and that's the typical modus operandum. That's how the MO
that's that,
now
yes,
they
that's
operate.
That, exactly. Exactly. And if you haven't ever been in the legal arena to see how they can escape this and escape that, it still doesn't make it right that a man is dead for no logical or legal reason. But yet, the focus is on the damage of the property. They're making excuses. This racism, this poverty, this uneducated young people out here has been existing in Maryland and these other states for years. And the politicians,
that's what our president, the president said, this is nothing new.
And nothing has been done about it. Nothing. And you get a bunch of ignorant people that don't know their rights, don't know the law, including those that are in position. And this time, they have some highly educated black people that are not
mm-hmm.
afraid. This young woman, she told her background, but she said, due process will be done.
Mm-hmm.
Will be done. But they're not going to show their hand. They're not going to show their hand. We got to start thinking godly, getting out here, teaching our children the right things in life to do, getting an education, loving each other. Stop hanging in the streets. Stop falling down the road to nowhere and doing all these evil, ugly things to each other. And those policemen are not trained properly. They're evil. I'm not seeing all of them, but there are some cold-hearted people in this world when it comes
yes,
to black people. And I'm not talking over because to be running my mouth. I'm talking about what I know, what I've seen in my investigations and the things that used to happen to me. When I first went to justice in 65, you'd pick up the phone, "How y'all niggers up there? This is government to government.
Government to government.
Government
from
to government.
From the south to the north. Exactly.
Exactly. Exactly. And you go there, and I'm telling you, when you see it for yourself, and it hasn't erased that much. It hasn't. It's just it's a little subtle.
Mm-hmm.
They know that. Look how they have treated our president. It's no way that a black man could have insulted a white president like these whites have insulted our black president. They would have lost their jobs. They would be in jail. Disrespect. Mm-hmm. On the lawn, in the White House. Name it.
You name it.
CIA, FBI, all of them.
They're in the State of the Union.
The law. Exactly. He would have been escorted out of the gallows. He would have been, if would have been a white president and a black congressman or senator would have done that, they would have been escorted out of there for disrespect. The guys that went over the White House fence, the two drunk FBI agents or CIA agents at the White House, you know, it's so broad. It's so broad. This is just a tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
And it's all
and this is what we were talking with some of the callers that were on earlier,
mm-hmm.
is that it has to be a point where we move toward making a difference, sort of like when the cameras were on that Bloody Sunday when they marched across the Pettus Bridge, and the people saw the dogs and the brutal the batons and the brutalization of innocent people. And they had to say enough is enough. They saw it, and they said this is not right. And so there had to be a change for civil rights, for voting rights, because it was in your face. It was like, you know, you say you're a civilized
and
society.
None of those people were prosecuted because that was the law.
Yeah.
That was the law back then.
Yeah.
You had to recite the Constitution. All kind of crazy things to vote. And they're trying to get all that to come back when you say you have to have identification to vote.
Right.
Show identification to vote. Crazy. Crazy mess like this. They're trying to change the voting laws and everything that went on back then that our foreparents died for, the freedom of the children of the day. They are trying to change it, but these young people are not going to stand for it. And it's a sad day that they have to go to jail fighting for their rights continuously. And that's all it is. They want to be treated fairly. They want to know that somebody is going to step up to the plate, give them a good job, let them be a man, treat them like a man, talk to them like a man. A little respect. Let's face it, there are some mean people out here that will take a policeman out in a heartbeat. The policemen are out there to protect us. But then when the police start going against us, they should be weeded out, taken out, and the authorities, the governor, the mayors, and all the people in control of the legal system, get it right.
And it's going to take continual effort, and that's what I wanted to share for our listeners. We're going to have this conversation on a continual basis. We're going to have it once a month. And we just invite everyone to tune in, chime in, let us know what you're doing in your community, how you're making a difference in your community. We want to hear from the police officers. We want to hear from the mayors and the congressmen, the women senators. Community as a whole, that this will be a broadcast that we can look forward to on a regular basis, where we can say, hey, I know this is wrong, I know this is right, this is what we're doing, turn this
around. But what are you doing about
it? Exactly. This will be an avenue, and so the first Sunday
yeah. of every month. We're going to have this broadcast. We'd like people to tune in, call in, let everybody know what's mm-hmm. going on. But we need to keep mm-hmm. it on the front burner. We can't let it go back. We have to continue to push forward for change, positive.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I'm an advocate. I'm out there. I've been out there ever since I was a little girl.
That's
standing
right.
up
That's right.
with my parents back in the day. And that was unheard of. And the same thing, if it goes back to that, we got to do it. We have to do this for our children. Or else we're wasting our time. Our vote means nothing.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And people have to get involved. And you know, just saying something mm-hmm. and not doing anything is not what gets results. Mm-hmm. You have to talk about it. You have to pray about it, and then you have mm-hmm. to do something about it
mm-hmm.
In order to get the change, the positive change that's needed. And so we're gonna be calling, we're gonna be shaking trees and getting people involved and getting people to commit to doing
mm-hmm.
something
mm-hmm.
For a positive change in our community, whether it's police, whether it's media, whether it's clergy, whether it's the community. So this is what we're gonna be doing. But I know you had a long day. We've had a long day, but it's been a good conversation, and we thank everyone for tuning in. And as always, we know that in the end, God's going to have the final say-so.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. He is in full control.
That's right.
We know that. We know that. Yes,
and what's done
every
in the dark is going to come to light.
Yes, it is. And everything that goes on in the dark is going to come to light, and it's all surface.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And
you have a good night, and hopefully we'll talk to you on the next show. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. We're going to wrap it up. We thank everyone for tuning in tonight. And, again, this will be something that we're going to be opening up every month for first Sunday of every month. We want to do this at the 7 o'clock hour on the first Sunday of every month, just to see what progress is, to see if anything has gone backwards, anything has gone forward, new developments in different cities and states across the country. So we just ask that you would spread the word that we will be talking about this and making sure it doesn't die down, and we'll see the progress of what goes on in Baltimore and the various cities across the United States. I know that's a tough subject, a tough solution, but together, through love, through the power of love and God, He can make a change and make a difference. All right, that's going to do it for us this evening. This is Pastor C, signing off. Pray that everyone has a great week. Stay engaged, stay focused, and continue to make a difference. Good night.